This is Columbia Morning on News Talk 1400 KFRU. We always appreciate the mayor of Columbia giving us time on the morning of a city council meeting. Sometimes those council meetings go quite late, but he's still able to join us and gives us this time. Thank you, Mayor. How are you?
I'm good, David. Good morning. It's easier to join you the morning before a council meeting than a morning after a council meeting sometimes.
All right. Mayor Brian Treese is here. City Council meets tonight. We do have an election also tomorrow. It's a very short ballot there. For those of us who live in town, we get to see the same issue basically twice on a county and then a city issue in regard to what's called a use tax. What can you provide today, do you feel like providing today in regard to the discussion about this use tax and whether we need it or not?
Well, I think everybody understands that online sales have deteriorated city sales tax collection and really puts our local businesses in an uneven playing field. And I'm not just talking about the downtown merchants that are now competing against online retailers everywhere, but I'm also talking about our local lumber yards. You know, a number of these student high-rise apartments come in. They purchase their goods out of state, have them shipped here. When a lot of those materials could have been bought locally and contributed to our tax base, the very tax base that is used to pay for the fire and public safety protection of those high-rises. And so, to me, I think it's a matter of fairness that probably takes a step closer to leveling the playing field.
Do you think that it is a confusing question for many? I think the basic line is that if you buy something online, why shouldn't you have to pay a sales tax? There are other parts to it, though, that seem to be very confusing for folks.
Well, I think so. And I think right now there's, you know, a Main Street Fairness Act at the federal level. And, you know, here in Missouri, we call it the streamlined sales tax, something that begins to again, create some equity between those bricks and mortar retailers and online sales. We all know and appreciate the convenience of Amazon and those other online stores. And a lot of times our local retailers are treated like showrooms, if you will, where you go in and look at a snowblower and then go order it online and have it shipped to your door for the convenience of it. And in the meantime, save the 8% local sales tax. Even though it's that UPS truck is still traveling on our streets and your house is still being protected by the Columbia Fire Department and Columbia Police Department.
Someone brought up the question last week while we were discussing the same issue of the ballot question about use tax. Somebody said, could this be targeted if money was raised through this tax targeted for police or for a special purpose? Your feelings about that?
Oh, of course. But it's also important to note that this is not new revenue. This is replacement revenue. To capture what the city has lost, and in that respect, to the extent, and I'm still uncertain whether this will actually collect any revenue up until the point that the Missouri Department of Revenue begins collecting and remitting that sales tax the way they do every other sales tax in the state. But that being said, yes, it would be treated just like general revenue, and I can tell you that a majority of general revenue funds are spent on public safety and streets.
When you say that you're unconvinced that there will be any additional collection of this revenue until the Missouri Department of Revenue starts to collect this, are you saying that it might not occur until the state passes a law of the similar use tax to what the county and city are asking tomorrow?
Well, right now, exactly right. And, you know, I know that there's a statewide revenue commission that is taking a look at streamlined sales tax, tax credits, all of those issues that play into this this stew of taxation, if you will. But I want to make sure, the fiscal note that we were presented, that based on the online sales that the city of Columbia has lost over the last 10 years, would have generated, had this use tax been in place, about $900,000 per year. And so that's important revenue. I mean, that's 9 police officers that we could have that would double the discretionary funding that we have for street maintenance and repairs. And but again, there has to be some type of cohesive and unified collection and distribution method that is typically handled by the Department of Revenue and then remitted back to those political subdivisions.
Are you understanding it right now that if you or I purchase more than $2,000 worth of items online that are not taxed with city tax, that we have to claim that on our sales income tax?
I think we do now already on our state income tax.
We do that now.
I think people forget. They don't go put their Amazon email in a folder and then add it up at the end of the year. And I think we'd all be surprised to look at 12 months worth of Zappos shoes, adding up to $2,000 a year. I think, that's still that voluntary collection that hopefully this type of mechanism in a more statewide application would ameliorate.
All right. So that is tomorrow, and that is the only ballot issue that many of us are going to be facing around this area.
Correct. And some may see two, one at the city and one at the county level.
And the reason it would be two is because you have to break down what you pay a sales tax. There is a city portion of a sales tax, mm-hmm. a county portion of a sales tax, a state portion of a sales tax, and sometimes a TDD portion of a sales tax when you go and purchase something, correct?
Correct. And by TDD, you mean a judge-approved tax increase.
I do mean a judge-approved tax increase right. on certain areas that need the developer of that area is supposed to spend that money on the improvements in that area.
Where the developer needs a little extra help.
That's right. Speaking of that, then, let's move to a TIF, which is not a tax like a TDD. There is a distinction between the two. And you're not voting on this tonight. However, the question is whether the requestor of the TIF for the second tower of the Broadway Hotel will proceed with it after what the commission decided a week ago.
Correct. And that commission voted 8-3 to reject and recommend a no vote by the city council for his application for a tax abatement on that second tower. And, I take that commission's due diligence very seriously. I wanted to make sure there's a fair process there. And in this case, you had the library board voting unanimously in opposition to it. You had the Columbia School Board of Education voting unanimously in opposition to it. You had the at-large members voting in opposition to it. They did the legwork of looking at that application, doing the due diligence on the numbers, looking at the but-for clause, looking at the conditions of blight that may trigger that next step of the cost-benefit analysis. I don't know whether the applicant is going to bring that forward at this point. The city council, he would need 5 votes at the city council to pass that because of the no recommendation from the TIF commission. If we do see that, it's probably going to be possibly introduced maybe at the second meeting in November and then a vote at the first meeting in December.
I think that's a complicated question also, because I think you could say no on that request and not be saying that the city doesn't need that or wouldn't benefit from the second tower. I think that you could say no based on the way that the legislation writes about TIFs. You could say no on that.
Oh, absolutely. So. I have no doubt it would be a benefit to downtown. The question is, should taxpayers subsidize that private development when we have other hotels operating? I mean, look at Drury Inn, purchased a very expensive piece of land on I-70, tore down the tired old Ramada Inn, and are building an 8-story hotel there without any tax support. David, if you wanted to expand your house and the only way you could get it done or make the numbers work is to collect 50% of the increased property taxes you were going to have to pay for that house, I don't know that anybody would support that, right? And that's exactly what we're asking for here. Now, that being said, I think the first Broadway Hotel Tower was a dramatic improvement over what we had there, the Regency. And the demolition costs alone may have justified that, but this is a different animal. And and again, I don't want to presuppose the facts until I've had a chance to look at the application if it comes forward.
Some of the comments, though, of people who were on that commission and looked at the request could, in certain interpretations and certain perspectives, make you feel good about downtown. Because things are so nice downtown right now that property is valuable and people want to be doing things downtown.
Oh, I don't think anybody from inside or outside Columbia could come down to downtown Columbia and not think it's a growing, thriving enterprise. And blight would probably be the last description that they would use to describe that.
Of course, the argument of the other side would be, well, come and take a look at this small little parcel of land, though, and tell us if you think anybody else is going to build anything there, or tell us if you think that this is valuable to anybody. That's where the argument lies.
Absolutely. But, June Pitchford, the county auditor, did a great financial analysis that looked at, even a simple investment would generate the same or more property taxes than what the abated second tower would. Even if you waited 5 years for a similar investment, it would generate more money over the 23-year period. You know, and if we get to that point, I'm certainly going to want to go in and look at the cost-benefit analysis of the original tower to see, you know, if that but-for clause was met, have those numbers materialized in a meaningful way? Have they exceeded those projections, in which case maybe he didn't need a TIF? If they haven't exceeded those projections, I'm not sure that we'd want to invest good money after bad to double down on that project.
I'll move on from that after I ask you this question. One of the newspaper articles last week that was in the aftermath of the commission voting not to support the application for that TIF said that perhaps the developer, the builder of the Broadway Hotel, David Parmley, may say, you know, I've got my eye on another part of land, which would be across Park Avenue from Rose Music Hall. I thought that area there, which has been cleared away from, I can't remember what, I don't know if it was MFA or whoever had that, it's kind of a gravel area now. The city talked about putting a park down there. What is the status of that right now, in your understanding? I thought I was surprised to see the article say that that was an area that the developer was thinking about using for a development, a second kind of development.
Well, that's the old Ameren gas plant. It's a brownfield. They have remediated, you know, the soil there, and I think they're waiting on a clearance letter from the Department of Natural Resources to that effect. The city of Columbia has the right of first refusal on that, not a developer. And I was a little surprised by that article, not the least of which didn't mention that the publisher's son is on the TIF commission and voted in favor of it. And if not the publisher's son, then certainly the property owner of the Tribune. I thought that was an important disclosure that failed to happen. But nevertheless, you know, whether that is a convention center, that is several phases into the future. And at this point, I'm not sure that there's an option for that developer to acquire that land until the city vacates its right of first refusal.
All right, well, thank you, because I was wondering about that. I was surprised by that also. I wasn't aware of that, so I thought that there was the city's choice. So thank you for clarifying that. What else do we need to talk about as far as the city council? We've talked about two things that are not on the city council agenda for tonight. And so, callers, if you want to join us about any of the things we have talked about or want to talk about, 442-8255 is the phone number. Tell me what's big on the agenda tonight.
Well, you've also got the farmers market concept coming up. And again, that's a rather unique public-private partnership between Columbia Parks and Recreation on city-owned property with a not-for-profit that is proposing to develop a shared farmers market and urban agriculture center there with a significant support from MU Healthcare, the MU Healthcare Pavilion. And that's an exciting project. And I just want to make sure that, you know, when we enter into these types of public-private partnerships, that the city is protected, that taxpayers are protected, that we're not undermining, you know, competitive bid procedures and making sure that we're getting the best value and for taxpayers and users.
So what do you have to decide tonight? Because they're already doing fundraising there. I thought they already had a groundbreaking there, and they'd already made the decisions about what it was going to basically hope to look like and how it would be used.
Yeah, it's to proceed with approving the master plan and proceeding with construction and going out for bid at this point and just getting the blessing of council. A lot of this stuff has been happening in parts, and this will be the first time that we'll have a copy of that operating agreement before council for a public hearing.
And for those who wonder what in the world we're talking about, that would be the Clary Shy area.
Correct.
Which would be near the Arc and near the existing Columbia Farmers Market.
The former Boone County Fairgrounds.
Exactly right.
Right.
Yep. It's big land there. If you know where there's the Agurb store, there's West Middle School, all of that area in that particular area there in between those two things that I just mentioned would be where this would be developing, just to the west side of the Arc.
That's right. And it's an exciting project. But right now, as you know, it is a frequent user there on Saturday mornings. I mean, that's a gravel parking lot where you have, you know, tents and pickups backed in. This would provide a little more climate protection for those vendors to come in, as well as having a kitchen, culinary kitchen there to really enhance that experience and have a little bit more of an education opportunity for
them. The investment by the city would come from the Parks and Rec funds.
Correct. That's a voter-approved tax for that project. And you know, to the extent we can, I'm always excited about the opportunity to extend taxpayer resources with the partnership of in this case, MU Healthcare, and and a not-for-profit.
I know that the Tribune has run the story a couple of times. I saw it over the weekend, and it had to do with a city. The headline, City Decreases Education Requirements for Columbia Police Department Officers. I've had that kind of conversation with the police chief, and he's on later this week, and so I'll talk to him more about that. But what is your feeling as the mayor about decreasing requirements for Columbia police officers?
Well, I think that's a bit of a misnomer. I mean, I think, look, we all know that recruiting police officers is very difficult right now, and I don't want to undermine our own standards for that. But at the same time, a number of police officers have military experience that may have gone directly from high school into honorable service in the U.S. military. And I want to attract those folks to public safety and to a law enforcement career. And so to the extent we're substituting that experience for education, I'm very comfortable with that. I don't think anybody would agree that that undereducated police officers would do a better job than those that have a college degree in criminal justice and the experience that we want. But at the same time, I want to make sure that we're not leaving any applicants on the table simply because they can't check that box. And so I think one of the things that this does is give the police chief a little bit more consideration for some alternative life experiences that may lend itself well to our community.
Speaking of the police, at the end of the meeting today, and I saw this as I was looking at the reports that you'll have an opportunity to review if you haven't, if folks want to see them, they can see these online at como.gov and then go to meetings and the agenda for the city council meeting tonight. The report is vehicle stops and listening tour summary. I started reading that last night. I actually fell asleep and I apologize for that. But I was trying to decide whether there was anything that we didn't know already in that report because it was talking about a summary of what has been meetings that have been held and suggestions from the public as to how to engage community and police, hopefully in community policing, many would say. But is there anything in that report that is different than what's already made the news?
Well, I don't think so. And if anything, I think this creates the mechanism for the city council to have the foundation for future discussion. It's a 643-page report that we got 3 days ago, and coincidentally, it probably took me that long to download it to review.
Thank goodness I only did the 13-page summary.
Well,
and I still fell asleep during
and,
that.
And look, this is by no means the beginning of the conversation or the end of the conversation. I think it's a snapshot of where we are to this date after three community engagement sessions with the NAACP and Race Matters Friends and as well as the city manager and police chiefs listening tour with various civic organizations and stakeholders. And, I think where we go from here is probably up to council. I don't think a 600-page report at the end of a city council meeting is probably that we will reach any decision tonight other than to continue the discussion and probably have a work session on that as we move forward together.
Any hidden gems in here as far as the plats for another neighborhood or for annexation? Anything else that you think is going to draw some attention?
There's a controversial annexation down on Gillespie Bridge Road. My look at that and driving through it, it's a two-lane road with no shoulder, and it looks like they're bootstrapping over a 100-year floodplain to get to a piece of property that that they need to become contiguous with the city limits so they can access our sewer. I'm going to take a critical look at it. I've had a lot of contacts from neighbors in that area that are already concerned about the safety of those roads. And, before we can bite off more than we can chew, I want to make sure that we're taking care of what we have within the city limits.
So the utilities haven't been expanded out there right to it?
You would have to cross, I guess that's Perchy Creek down there. You would have to cross kind of a natural geographic barrier in order to get out to that parcel.
Anything else keeping the mayor busy now?
Oh, it's always busy. I'm excited about where Columbia is right now. I'm pleased with the growth at the University of Missouri. We have a lot of economic development projects. Since I've been mayor for the last 18 months, we have created or retained over 1,059 new jobs with a capital investment of $334 million. And, this is a great time to be in Columbia. These are good family-supporting, career-making jobs that I think everybody benefits from, and I'm excited.
Have a good meeting tonight.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for being here. Mayor Brian Treese has been our guest. This is KFRU.